This is the I Love Success podcast. I'm Peter Drukowski, and I have made a vow to myself to help as many people as possible to achieve their dreams. Let's get started. Hey guys, and welcome back to the I Love Success podcast. This is the podcast where I meet the coolest and most successful people on the planet and share their stories. I'm glad to be on this journey together with you. What started as an idea has now become the start of a movement. My mission is to help 10 million people in 10 years to achieve their dreams. I can't do it myself, and because of that, I'm so grateful to all my amazing guests and listeners from all over the world. Thank you. Get ready to get inspired, because here we go. But before we get started, let's give it up to our sponsor, Heston's Beds in Los Angeles. Heston's has always been driven by a passion for sleep and the many benefits it brings for the body and soul. Sleep on a Heston's bed is sleep that makes a difference in the quality of your life. Sleep that allows you to function at your optimal best, a natural process that cannot be replicated, bought over a counter, or swallowed in a pill. A Heston's bed is defined by its comfort and support, breathability, and the ability to regulate your body's temperature while you sleep. While many beds contain a variety of chemicals, glues, latexes, and foam, Heston's beds are handcrafted with exclusively all-natural materials to create the perfect night's sleep. If you're serious about success, you should be serious about your sleep, and Heston's can help you. Check them out at hestonsla.com. Today's guest is a Hollywood actor, Michael Trucco, and I feel honored to be invited into his beautiful home here in Hollywood Hills. Michael was born and raised in San Mateo, California, and graduated from Santa Clara University with a BA in theater arts, and was quickly headed to Los Angeles to pursue his dream of a career in film and television. Since then, he has been a successful actor and starred in series such as Beverly Hills 90210, Pensacola, Wings of Gold, Arliss, One Tree Hill, Castle, How I Met Your Mother, Revenge, The Big Bang Theory, Law & Order SVU, Criminal Minds, V, Psych, Scandal, Battlestar Galactica, and Fairly Legal, just to name a few. He can currently be seen alongside Kathy Bates in Disjointed, where he plays Taekwon Dog, now streaming on Netflix. Michael also appeared opposite Jessica Biel and Nicolas Cage in the film Next and headlined the Battlestar Galactica prequel movie The Plan, and can be seen in the thriller horror films Hush and The Bye Bye Man, both of which are released this year. Last, but definitely not least, he recently completed shooting in London and Bulgaria for the Millennium Pictures feature film Hunter Killer with Gerard Butler and Gary Oldman, due out in theaters in 2018. He lives in Los Angeles with his wife, actress Sandra Hess, and their two dogs and two cats. Welcome, Michael.
Thank you for having me, Peter.
Yeah, I'm actually in your home, so
maybe
you should welcome me.
I'm glad you can welcome me to my backyard.
Yeah, it's just an amazing feeling sitting here with you today here in the hills and overlooking the beautiful mountains that we have out here.
A beautiful late November day, 84 degrees.
Yeah, isn't that crazy?
It is. It's a little nuts.
So let's cut to the chase, Michael. You've done a lot in your life as far as acting comes, but who are you really as a person?
Yeah, you are cutting it right to the chase. I think what you see is what you get. And that sounds kind of like an obvious answer. I think the mystique for acting is that there's a certain level of mystery, and I think we try to maintain a certain level of mystery, at least in the school that I grew up in. Acting, I started in a world before there was social media, before there was such access to, there was so much access to every single facet of every single part of everybody's life. In the world that I grew up in sport, in film, in television, in politics, there was a certain anonymity and mysterious quality to these quote-unquote celebrities. I think we've lost that a little bit, and so I think that nowadays what you see is what you get. I try to maintain a certain degree of, not anonymity, but privacy. But I think you know, the apple doesn't fall too far from the tree. You gravitate towards roles. You put into performance what you know, what you live. And so what a lot of people see on film and what people see in roles and in television, there's always a certain aspect of that actor, whether it's me or anybody, in that character. Yeah, you try to strive to become a character, and we want to do our best as actors to become somebody else and inhabit the shoes and walk in the shoes and inhabit the life of another character. But invariably, you're going to put certain aspects of your own being into that character. So when people go, what's Truco like? You kind of get a sense of, you know, you can see it. I try to be true to myself. That takes a lot of time to realize that, too, what that means. You know, I think I spent the early part of my career trying to mold to other people's expectations. And there's a point in which you finally go, I do what I do. If you're buying, great. If you're not, I'll go find somebody that is.
So after completing college, can you talk us moving to LA and, like, what was the first thing you did coming here? Because there's people from all over the world that want to be here. And today we're sitting in your beautiful house and overlooking this beautiful view and just like talking. So what was the first thing you did when you came to LA?
It's funny. You mentioned we're sitting in this house. I'll tell you exactly. The first thing I did before I even moved to LA was write on a yellow pad of, you know, lined paper with a pencil, my goals. I visualized, and this is a lot has to do with, I don't know if you're familiar with Tony Robbins, Anthony Robbins, but yeah. I was reading a lot of his books. And this is mid-90s, right? And one of the exercises he has you do is, without any inhibition or without any editing, don't edit yourself, write your goals. And they can be commercial goals. They can be, they can be relationships, career, physical things. And I remember one of the things that I wrote down was that one day I want to live in a house in the Hollywood Hills with a view and a pool. I wrote that. I can find that somewhere in a box someplace. I have these things written down. I wanted to be on a TV show. I wanted to direct a movie. You know, I have all these things, but one of them was exactly where we're sitting today. And I wrote that going on almost 20 years ago. So what I did to prepare myself to move to LA was write goals, visualize them, actually picture them. Because if you don't know what you want, you don't know how the hell to get there. You got to know what you want. You have to have a clear idea and make it big. Don't edit yourself. Don't go, well, and that's what I did in my career early. I went for plays and I was like, well, I'll just read for this role way down here on the cast list because there's no way I'm going to read for the lead. That doesn't make any sense. And I was like, bullshit. Read for the lead. Read for the number one on that call sheet. Go for the lead of the play. If you don't get it, then they can put you in another role. But my experience was that my friends were getting all the leads when I was in college, and I was getting those little secondary roles here and there. And so I had this weird, comes back to confidence. So I, before moving to Los Angeles, wrote down a set of goals and ideals and things that I wanted to achieve and wanted, you know, physically in life. And one of them was sitting in this house. Yeah. I mean, it blows my mind sometimes.
How does that feel?
It feels incredible because it's like being in a time capsule. I swear to God, I feel like I just shot myself 20 years into the future. And I'm sitting here and sitting facing you in a chair opposite, outside next to a pool. It's in the 80s. It's near December. We're in Los Angeles. And I'm looking out over the valley. I mean, I sometimes can't believe it because the journey to get here was long and you don't remember every step. But I knew I wanted this. I knew it. I mean, it was crystal clear to me. So you work for it and you get yourself there. So I wrote down a set of goals for myself when I moved to Los Angeles. And if you want to know, technically the first thing I did was pick up a trade publication called Dramalog, which doesn't exist anymore, but now, of course, you know, with technology, everything is online. But it was basically a casting notices for plays because I had theater experience. I had no experience in film or television, but I did theater. So I got myself down here and I got busy and I started going through this publication called Dramalog, and there were casting announcements, and there you would look for male, 20 to 25. This is the part, this is the play. Okay, I'd circle that one. Find this one, circle that one. There was a phone number and an address. I would send a headshot and a resume. Send it to them, you wait for the phone to ring, and you would send out dozens of them, as many as I could get. And if you get a bite, great. hey, we looked at your picture, we saw your resume, and we'd like you to come in and read for us. So then you go to the audition. And I mean, it's good old fashioned pounding the pavement. I mean, it was like, you know, like early sales calls, just knocking on doors. And I started doing theater, man. I got cast in a play called A Few Good Men by Aaron Sorkin. It was a movie that Tom Cruise and Jack Nicholson did. And I get cast and I drive all the way down to Hermosa Civic Theater, which, if you know the geography of Los Angeles, where we live now in Studio City, to Hermosa. I was in Hollywood at the time, but the drive to Hermosa every day, by the way, it was horrible. You know, you have to go down the 405 and you got to go past the airport. And it took me an hour and a half, sometimes 2 hours, just to go to rehearsal. I was like, what did I get myself into? But here I am. I'm young and ambitious and in my 20s, so I just sucked it up. I would never do that now. I'm too lazy.
That's what I do when it comes to Santa Monica to meet me.
So now you know. So, okay, the truth is out. Now he knows. Yeah, dude, I did my time. Trust me. And that's, I mean, what, it's probably only like 5 or 7 miles away, really, as the crow flies. But it takes so long. For anybody who does not know L.A., it sucks to drive from Hollywood to Santa Monica.
Yeah.
So I did it though, man. I got in my piece of crap car and I just put myself in the worst time of day of traffic to go to rehearsal to do A Few Good Men. And you talk about the signs. I'm doing this show. Oh, and I thought I was going to read for one of the smaller characters. And the director says, what about Kathy? What about the part that Tom Cruise played? So I read for it. He cast me in that role. And we're doing this simple little, you know, community production of A Few Good Men. And one night I get a phone call, or the box office says there's a note left at the box office from a manager with a phone number and wants you to call him because somebody had come to see the show and somebody went, who's that kid? You know, I was young and didn't have representation. So there was, those were the signs. But again, it wasn't like anybody was throwing me out. You know, I didn't do a play and suddenly got in a movie. I got myself a manager. Yeah. And from that, my manager got me, you know, auditions. And from auditions, I got bit roles. And from bit roles, I got bigger roles. And from bigger roles, I got recurring guest stars. And then I started, you know, and that snowball just started to roll. But it took a while, man, and it takes a ton of rejection.
I think you're right in that sense. Like, the people that I've met that have come so far, it's not even an option to quit. You know, they cry, they lose, they have so many failures, but at the end of the day, you know, they don't even think about, it's not even in their mind, you know, to quit. I'm doing this. Like, people asking me, do you still train karate? Come on. It's like asking, do you go to the toilet? I've done it since I was a kid. I want to do it till the day I die. But people, I think a lot of people, they quit so early. When the first little failure, they quit. Come on, how can you? Yeah. You can never reach.
Well, there you go. Then you answer. I mean, I didn't. Yeah, and it's funny. I'm so glad you asked me these questions because in retrospect, I never had the genetic impulse to want to quit. Yeah. I doubted myself, and you said you do. You cry and you sulk, and you want pity. But I never had that moment. I never said I'm done. Never. So I took the signs that I would find a positive spin. But you're right. You can't set a time limit. You can't. I don't know, man. It's the drive to want to keep getting back up and doing it over and over and over again. And it's a belief system, and it is a manifestation is another way. That's what I said earlier when I took the idea of Tony Robbins. Picture it.
Yeah.
Visualize it. How do you know where you're going if you don't have a picture where the end is? Yeah. I could walk from here to New York. It would take a really long goddamn time, but you can do it.
Yeah.
There's a physical landmass that goes between Los Angeles and New York, and there's a way to actually put one foot, and you take a left and a right, left, right, left, and you keep walking, and you could eventually get there. Now, that's an illogical way to get from Los Angeles to New York, but you could do it.
Yeah.
If I knew where it was, and if I looked at a map and go, okay, well, if I walk to here, that's about 10 miles, I'd rest, and then I walk this way, and then you can get there. So to me, that was as unrealistic when I was first moving to Los Angeles. To succeed in this business was as crazy as walking to New York. But I was like, but it can be done.
Yeah.
So if it can be done, why not me?
Yeah.
If it can be done, then why not try it? Because I'm looking around, and people are doing it all the time. Yeah. People are succeeding. People are acting. People are in music. People are painting. People are writing. They're poets. They're athletes. I mean, it happens, and yeah, sometimes it just happens because they're lucky, but luck is only can only take you so far. So it can be done. Sandra and I talk about this. If not me, man, somebody else. Sometimes I look at an audition and I say, I can't do this. These sides, these lines don't make sense. I don't know this character. And she goes, babe, you don't have to do it, but somebody will. And somebody's going to get hired for that job because somebody's going to figure out how to make these lines work and make that character believable. And man, when she says that to me, I'm like, oh, damn it. Because I want her to go, yeah, you're right. This is terrible. Don't do it. She goes, fine. You don't have to, but somebody will.
You are, we can see you as Taekwondo in Disjointed. I love it. If you need any karate moves or Taekwondo kicks, I can help you out.
My character's awful at Taekwondo.
So, How was it to be in that show, and can just talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, so Disjointed is a sitcom. It's a conventional sitcom, and it's on Netflix. So it's unconventional in that sense because most people think of sitcoms as family, sacrosanct sort of that network television laugh track family friendly sitcom. And here we are doing a multicam, half-hour, live studio audience sitcom for Netflix, where we have no censorship. So language is not such an issue. And the topic is marijuana, and, you know, it gets pretty racy. But it has great pedigree because Chuck Lorre, who is the creator of Two and a Half Men, Mom, Big Bang Theory, you know, he's got a huge pedigree in half-hour television. He took on this project called Disjointed. So we're working with Chuck Lorre. Kathy Bates from Misery, which in American Horror Story, and the list goes on and on, but I mean she's most well known for her role in Misery, is the lead on our show. She plays Ruth Feldman, and she owns a pot dispensary in suburban Los Angeles, and I play Taekwondo, and I own a dojang that's directly next door to her pot dispensary, and I loathe all things drugs. I hate pot. I hate stoners. I believe in the way of the warrior, not the way of getting high. So I'm sort of a thorn in her side. I'm the nemesis to her protagonist. But as the show evolves, we kind of get to see Taekwondo stick around. I'm not just a one-dimensional bad guy. If you haven't seen it, the first 10 are already out. If you haven't seen it, you'll see what I mean. As the second 10 come out in January, the character evolves even more. Not to say that Doug is, hitting the bong just yet, but there is a certain redemption to the character that could have been so easily one-dimensional, And that's says a lot about the writing, They could have just written this bad guy who kind of has a stick up his ass and doesn't like weed, and then, we would have seen enough of him. But they kind of gave me something to work with. And he's a little endearing, if not totally goofy and ridiculous, but there's something endearing about Taekwondo, I think. I hope. I don't know. Maybe he's just a jerk.
I love it. I love the show. And talking about, we're in California, like almost everybody smokes weed here.
Yeah,
like,
I know, right? It's become as normal as having a beer.
So what's your opinion about weed and marijuana?
I think we're on the right track. I think it's smart. I think smart meaning the legislation to legalize it. I wouldn't say that weed is necessarily smart, but I think it's certainly no more destructive than alcohol. It's just perception, isn't it? I mean, we have, alcohol is accepted. Beer is a brand. I mean, hell, sports are sponsored by these brands, and they make funny commercials. But really, alcohol is a destructive property, and it has ramifications on both the physical and emotional and mental state of human beings. But we've accepted it because it's legal. In the meantime, marijuana has a stigma because it's a Class A narcotic in the federal government. It's a drug. So we're like, ooh, that's a drug. But really, alcohol's a drug. So marijuana is going to be regulated much in the same way that alcohol is, and will be sold to, persons over 21, and it will be taxed just like alcohol is, and it will. I think there's going to be a time in 2, 3, 4 decades when it will just be as normal as somebody putting a bottle of wine on the center of the table for a dinner party. There might also be a little cup with some joints. But it still, to this day, has this stigma. Because like any drug, it can be abused. Alcohol can be abused, and marijuana and prescription drugs and everything that's, can be abused. But I think there's a lot of benefits to marijuana. And I, you know, I've said this for as long as I can remember. I've never seen anybody start a fight or get in a fight that was high. Yeah. I've seen a lot of bar fights and a lot of bad shit happen when guys are drunk. Yeah. Alcohol is an angry drug. Marijuana doesn't make anybody angry. The difference, this is my joke. I always say when you're in a bar and somebody's drunk, like, what are you looking at? And the guy that's high goes, whoa, what are you looking at? It's the same scenario, like, dude, are you looking at me? Oh, no way. That's so cool. I was looking at you. But the drunk goes, you looking at me? What the fuck, man? What's your problem? And there's something, you know, there's a calming effect that, you know, that is to say that it should not be abused. People shouldn't wake and bake and just spend all day getting high. But I think an occasional recreational dose of cannabis can be very enlightening, very relaxing. Not to mention all the medical benefits of CBDs. I think we're on the right track. I think if we can just eliminate one more criminal element in the world, and my God, if we can undermine the marijuana black market industry by regulating it, well, then you remove that part of the criminal element. Let's find a way to regulate it. Let's find a way to profit off it. And of course, the states that have already legalized it are seeing huge revenues. Huge, man. Yeah. I mean, think about it. When California, those dispensaries are making cash hand over fist, and they don't know what to do with it. So if they'd finally legalize it and allow them to reinvest those earnings instead of having to put them into a brick safe, you know, or stuff it into a mattress somewhere because they're not allowed to put it into banks that are federally regulated, you know. Yeah. So I'm an advocate for it. I've got no problem with it, and I'm kind of curious to see what happens in California with it. Yeah. It's certainly that, you know, it's relevant to me now because it's the topic of the show that I'm doing. Yeah. And I occasionally like to partake, so, you know, I'm not going to lie.
Thank you. Thank you for sharing that. And my grandfather taught me a cool thing talking about that. Every summer I went from Sweden to Macedonia to spend the summer with my relatives. So I hanged out a lot with my grandfather. And one day we were in the city, we met some of his friends. We sat down for a coffee. And after 30 minutes, he said, we got to leave now because we have a meeting. And we left and said bye, you know. And I asked my grandfather, we don't have a meeting. So, yeah, but we can't sit. Those people, the only thing they do all day is drinking coffee. So go meet your friends, be nice, but then go on with your life. You can't, don't be the one that leaves last all the time.
That is part and parcel of the story I just told. It's exactly when I realized, look at these people are here every week. Oh, wait a minute. I'm here every week. Oh, wow. Yeah. I've become that. Mix it up. Have some place to go. Just do different. Don't go. Yeah. Do something different. Have a plan. That's a great thing. I got to go meet somebody. Maybe you do, maybe you don't. But don't just wallow in one thing. Yeah. It's important. You know, it's important for your own sanity. Especially if you're going to come to Los Angeles and look, man, you're going to come down. And if anybody's listening to this that is just starting out, people ask me this all the time. What would you do? I don't know because I didn't grow up in this. Internet age. I didn't grow up in the social media age. I didn't grow up in the celebrity culture where everybody can be a celebrity instantly overnight. This popularity contest. So, you know, the advice I have would be different. You know, I wouldn't know how to tell somebody. Nowadays, I think the advice is get yourself a YouTube channel and make a funny video and, you know, get famous. And my day was come to study your craft, go to school like I did, you know, get a theater degree, go and do some theater, do a monologue, do a scene, you know, learn how to build some sets, learn how to sew a costume, learn how to apply makeup, learn how to hang lights. You know, I had to do all that in the theater. I had to go the old way. Nowadays, it's different. Nowadays, you know, you're facing a lot more competition. Yeah, there's a lot more outlets. There's way more television stations. There's all kinds of multimedia, you know, places for people to end up in the business and become famous if that's your goal. But sometimes I think that's the wrong end game, is just to be famous.
So at its core, why do you act?
Because I don't know how to do anything else. because I love storytelling. I love the ability. I crave the ability to move somebody emotionally. That's my high. to make somebody laugh is a drug, man. There is nothing, there is no high. There is no line of cocaine. There is no ecstasy. There is nothing that can fill that endorphin that is released when you make somebody laugh. If you can make somebody cry via a performance, through a story, be uncomfortable. I've had people say, you know, I wish you didn't do that role on Law and Order that you play that rapist. That creeped me out. I hated you. That was horrible. Don't ever do that again. I was like, good. There we go. If it made you feel like that, then I must have done something right. I like the ability to elicit an emotional response out of somebody. It's a drug, and maybe that's a selfish reason, but I think that's why people paint. Certainly, why people write music, lyric poems, because that's the point of art, right? Some people look at a big blue painting with a red dot in the middle, and they're like, "Oh my God, it's brilliant." And other people go, "It's just a blue dot on a red wall." Well, that's the point. Yeah. It evoked some reaction from somebody, so. I wanted to know what's behind the curtain of Oz. I wanted to get in this business. It goes back, this whole thing is coming back full circle. When I was in high school, in grade school, and I went to go see theater, I wanted to know what was going on in that world of fantasy. I wanted to live in that world. Because what I saw when I went to a theater and the lights went down in the house and the curtain opened up, in that rush that I got and watching these people come to life, I was like, oh my God, I love the story. I love story. Yeah. And I want to be part of it. I want to be part of storytelling. I want to be part of that social discourse in this world. There's we don't cure cancer, and we don't, we're not rocket scientists, and this isn't world peace, but entertainment is an important part of the social discourse. It's an escape. And if I can provide somebody with a little escape, I've had stories of people who said they binge watched all through Battlestar Galactica while they were in the hospital, fighting a disease, or they, got them through this emotional time in their life. Ah, that's so gratifying, man. That's such a great feeling when somebody comes up and say, "Hey, man, you were a part of something that really affected me."
I love that. And I think being in this city, sometimes we can't see how much you guys affect people. People watch you all over the world. And in small cities or other countries, it's insane how much it could give to people. And I'm so glad we did this. I just have two more questions, and then we're gonna get going with the day. We've been talking for a long time, and it's been a lot of fun. So, one question that I have: let's imagine you're 87 years old. You're sitting in a rocking chair, looking out. Maybe you're here, looking out over this beautiful view in the valley here. What do you want to have accomplished at that point? What do you want to say? Okay, I did this.
That's a good question. I think I want to have left a body of work that succeeded in everything we just talked about 2 minutes ago. I want to have known that I have participated in the emotional reactions of other people. I want to know that I have participated in an industry of entertainment that gave people pleasure, that gave them an escape, that gave them, brought them some form of happiness. That to me is the legacy of the reason I got into this, and what I want people to go back and go, man, I loved that show, I loved that movie, I saw that performance. It affected me there are certain performances in films and television shows I can think of when I see that person's face, I'm like, man, if it's on cable late at night, I'll have to watch it again. I want people to have that feeling. I want to know that I was a part of something that affected the emotions and psyches of other human beings.
I love that. I feel the same way. That's why I'm glad to have these conversations, because people, in 100 years, people could still listen to this.
Exactly.
This this is timeless, you
exactly.
know?
Exactly.
And I think it will work in 100 years too.
Oh, I have no doubt about it. I don't doubt that. And that's gratifying to think that somebody, that's, you know, that's the, when people say, you know, we're on the show on Netflix right now, and they go, oh, we watched your show on Netflix, and then we read stuff online. People went back and watched all 10 again. And then they went back and watched all 10 again. I was like, they do it with Battlestar too. They watched the series start it over. It's like, man, you went through it again. You, that must really, to want to go back through that experience. And that's something you're saying. They can listen to these for years and years and years, and they might want to go back and listen to another one that you did.
Yeah.
Because they remembered something that somebody said. Oh, what was that thing? That's cool, man.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
Yeah. I love that. Thank you guys for listening in, and a big thanks to our sponsor, Hestens Beds Los Angeles. Hestens will change the way you sleep forever with the finest beds, mattresses, and bedding accessories in the world. If you're serious about success, you should be serious about your sleep. Check them out at HestensLA.com. If you have any questions and comments to me, check us out at ILSuccess.com. And remember, if you like this podcast, share it with your friends, your family, and people who can benefit, because that's how we grow and that's how we can help many people. And again, a big thanks to Michael Truco for taking the time doing this. It means a lot.
Thank you for having me. I really enjoyed it.